Jax Media, helping give fighters and fight promoters the edge to get noticed and pound through to success. At Jax Media, we know how difficult it can be to get sponsorships for your fights or fighters. Don't miss out on prime opportunities. Showcase your fight history, stats, bio, sponsorship rate, and clickable links to your online and social media platforms with a custom media kit. Media kits starting as low as $50. Also, ask about our custom Facebook page setup, apps, fighter and fight promotion websites, and more. Visit us online today at www.jaxmedia.ca. Jax Media, design with an edge.
All right, everybody, welcome to MMA Madhouse Live, Cubicle to the Cage, weekly breakdown. Tonight we got my partner in crime, as always, Lapaki, kicking it with us. No intro music for him because we're going old school tonight. How you doing, Mr. Lapaki?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Driving up I-5, man. Heading home from work. Ready to talk some...
Okay.
I'm leaving my cubicle, and I'm rolling to the crib while Boyd and his guys go from their cubicle to the cage. A little bit different. Concrete jungle here. You know, I don't know, man. I think that's a pretty good tie-in.
Oh, I love it. I'm super excited. I want to give a big shout-out to Draco Impact Armor and Jax Media for sponsoring this next 11 weeks of shows. That will be each week Tuesday at 6 p.m., folks, West Coast, 9 p.m., East Coast. We'll be breaking it down. And I'm not even going to mess around, dude. I'm dialing up Japan itself right now. We're going to get this shit started right
now. For the listeners, you know, they should... Oh, hey, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm well.
So, hey, like I was saying, though, for the listeners, Skippy, hold on. Let me finish this sentence. Now that Breaking Bad is over, there's no excuse not to be watching Cubicle to the Cage. It's like the natural progression.
From
Walter White to Boyd Sharp.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, I tell you, I never realized that parallel. I was actually a school teacher.
Oh, weird.
See, it works magically.
Yeah, I was a high school teacher.
Chemistry.
What did you teach?
Literature, English.
Well, then you must hate my grammar.
Oh, that's fine. The funky accent hides it nicely.
The funky accent. Yes. Boyd Sharp, everyone, is live with us. Boyd, tonight we got Lapaki, who's usually my co-host on everything I do for Madhouse. He missed last week, but trust me, him, Chris Gregory, the vice president over at MMA Topics, these guys have become junkies for Cubicle to the Cage, and he was not going to miss tonight to be able to sit down and talk with you. And I'm telling you what, you guys are blowing up all over the world, man. I got friends in Norway talking about you. I got friends in Texas talking about you. I saw your on MMA Inside the Cage. I saw your clip there. You know, I love it. You know, things are still obviously progressing because people are learning about it. We talked a little bit last week on about how it's changing your life and some of the notoriety you're getting with it. Before we, you know, get too far off topic, I really want to talk about episode 3 a lot because you and the Cube finally got to go and see the breakdown, what it's really about, what you guys are doing everything for. And I want to know what your experience was, what you thought. And anybody out there who wants to follow this, MMAMadhouse.com, we put up Boyd's blog every Saturday. He has a special link for Cubicle to the Cage on the top of the page. Every one of the blogs, all of the press releases are in there. So let's talk about episode 3, Boyd.
Yeah, I mean, Peter called Extreme Cage Combat, and he gave us an opportunity to come to one of the shows before we even started training. And we got to hang out back in the locker room with the fighters when they were preparing for their fights. And we got to stand right cage side, close enough to be spattered with blood, to watch that event. And, I mean, it was such an honor and a privilege. I mean, I don't know who gets a chance to do that as they're about to start training mixed martial arts. It was unbelievable. And it turned out down the road, and we can't get into much of it right now, but it turned out to be invaluable experience for us. We got to watch the fighters physically warm up. We also got to watch them undergo the psychological transformation that happens to some of these guys when they go from their average funny workaday personalities and transform themselves over the course of an evening into somebody who's about to fight at a high level. It was really, really eye-opening. And then watching the fights from so close up, because, I mean, I'd seen it on TV for years and years, and I'd been to a couple of events where I sat in the nosebleeds, but standing cage side, and as Jock Hiltz, one of the Cubes, says, standing there and hearing leather hit face and hearing shins digging into thighs from just feet away was a different experience, I'll tell you. It was quite shocking to me.
Wow. Now, you know, for everyone out there, you know, that has been watching the show, basically the Cubes so far have just kind of made the first cut, the second cut, and you guys start to learn the training aspect, but you guys get to go not only see these guys train, but then go see them perform in a cage. How many of the team members of the Cubes were caught off guard, honestly?
You know what? I think almost all of us. I think there were a few people who had fairly close friends who were pro fighters, and certainly Jeanette D'Entremont, whose fiancé at the time, now her husband Mike, was a pro fighter, so she was used to it. But all the rest of us, it was sort of this clinical, cartoonish activity that we saw on TV. And to see it really, really, really close, I think shocked a lot of people. Nobody was willing to walk away that night and simply just not start training. I just think the sheer embarrassment would have been too much for them. So everybody showed up. But I think there might have been a handful of people who broke even that first night before we'd even started training, just watching that.
Wow. Now, you know, I've got to ask you, you know, you guys got a great guy there. And one of the I always forget his name, the kickboxing kid. Now,
Morteza.
Mortez, thank you. Mortez, I always forget that. Did he obviously went with a group of you guys. Did he play it up at all? You know, was his, you know, because we talked with Peter last week, and we know that he has that kind of aggressive nature because of his previous fight training and kickboxing. Did he blow that off as well as he does some of the training aspects?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, and I don't think he was. I don't think he was trying to put on airs for us. I think in Morteza's case, he really, really did believe that he was already there. You know what I mean? He'd been kickboxing for over half of his life at that point. And he'd been training religiously over that period. And he had a picture of himself as the fighter that he wanted to be in his mind. And that's a very, very powerful thing. I mean, I was coming from the exact opposite of that spectrum. I mean, I'd never thrown a punch in my life. I would run away from a fight with a good head cold. I mean, I wanted nothing to do with fighting growing up. I was just positively terrified of the thought that anybody would ever hit me for any reason. For Morteza, he was a fighter in his mind. So watching MMA up close, he was perfectly comfortable with that, and I think he was just telling himself, I can't wait to get in there, I'm ready, put me in now. I think that's the place that he was in. And he was probably the only one of us who was kind of in that mental headspace. The rest of us were terrified.
Now, you know, you got to watch, I believe it was Ricky Goodall, Gavin Tucker, and obviously tonight's guest will be joining us later, Mike Kent, all perform that night. Up to the buildup of that fight that they had at ECC, was there a specific fighter that you kind of took to, followed a little closely? Now, and I'm not talking about the show purpose, you personally as a Cube.
Gavin Tucker, for sure. Gavin, I felt an awful big connection with Gavin. He's also from Newfoundland, the province where I grew up. So I had that connection. We both have very similar upbringings, I think. Grew up in very small rural towns from the same province. He's a real small guy. I think he fights at 145. And he's just a super sweet, easygoing kid. But then I saw him train for the first time, and it was completely terrifying what he becomes when he fights. I think meeting him and meeting Ricky and meeting Mike was the first time that I'd ever met an athlete in a combat sport who approached their training in such a way. To be not just to be professional fighters, because, I mean, technically a professional fighter is just a fighter who gets paid to fight, if you want to bring it down to its brass tacks. But these guys are consummate professionals. These guys study and practice every part of the game that they possibly can, mental, physical, whatever is available. They put 100% of themselves into it. And to see guys like that going after each other in sparring was just amazing to me. And because I knew the guys a little bit outside of the gym, it was shocking to me because they're such nice, sweet, easygoing guys. And then you put them in a training situation, and my God, I mean, I thought they were trying to kill each other because I'd never really seen hard sparring with guys preparing for a professional mixed martial arts fight at that point. And that was just in the gym with their training partners. So, yeah, seeing it ratcheted up another notch when we actually went to the ECC was it was a real eye-opener for me.
Now, sorry, Lepaki, I'm going to jump in one more time. You know, you're talking about the eye-opening, seeing them train. Well, in Episode 3, you guys are going to step up your training, and you guys start to work with striking. How odd is the right word. Did it feel for someone like yourself to step in there and start to learn the striking game? Did you feel like, I got it? Did you feel sloppy? Was it mentally hard? You know, talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was ridiculously embarrassing. I think when the average person watches, whether it be Muay Thai, boxing, mixed martial arts, and they see people punching and kicking, I think the average Joe thinks that they can actually just get up off their couch and throw some combinations and look and execute in some similar fashion to what they're watching on television. That is completely wrong. That is 100% wrong. And if they want to put on a video camera and video themselves doing some shadow boxing or sparring for a few seconds against somebody who has a little bit of skill, they will very quickly find out that they don't know thing one about throwing a punch. Because what amounted to what our attempts to throw punches or combinations turned out to be was like, it was like spasming or flailing or somebody having an epileptic fit. It was horrible.
Now, you know,
That's one hell of a visual.
Yeah, well, I tell you, we have plenty of B-roll sitting around on a hard drive somewhere that I hope to God never sees the light of day.
Now, Boyd, how far into that event until you felt comfortable with, like, you know, hearing with the sounds that you were hearing and coming to, like, really confront the fact that you're going to be doing that?
It was a real emotional roller coaster because one of the early fights was a new guy in the gym, Nathan Hamilton. He'd been training for a while, and this was going to be his first pro fight. So Peter said to us, he said, follow Nathan, watch how he reacts, see how he's doing, because, I mean, a year, 14 months from now, that could be one of you guys. So see how he's handling it. So we did, and I mean, he was very composed, and in the background, he seemed really intense, and he had a fighter's air about him. He seemed kind of quietly angry and evil, if you looked at him. It looked like he was in the perfect state of mind to go out and have a fight, and then we followed him out, and we were all super pumped up, and he did really well against a super tough opponent, and then with 1 second left, he got just, like, knocked the hell out.
Yeah, I thought that was who you were talking about.
Yeah, and it just like completely blew the wind out of our sails. So we go back into the dressing room, and then he's really emotional, and his family is there, and his teammates are trying to talk him down and say, hey, man, listen, it happens. You got in there. You got to work some stuff. And, I mean, he was just super, super disappointed, which he shouldn't have been. So I actually hung around with him when the next fight even started, and I just walked over, and I shook his hand, and I said, listen, I said, I want to get in the cage a year from now. I said, if I can fight like you fought for 4 minutes and lose, I'll take that over walking in and landing a lucky punch and finishing it in 10 seconds and never really having a fight. And he kind of smiled and gave me a pat on the back, and I think he appreciated that. But I think from that very moment, we were really pulled into the event because the Titans fighters, like Gavin and like Mike and like Ricky and Mark Gray, another guy, had some big knockouts and some come from behind TKOs and submissions, and it was just it was just such an emotionally charged night that I think that's what made the fists hitting faces and busted eyebrows and everything not really seem so important to us. It was the emotional high. We could feel that, even though we weren't directly involved. We could sense that emotional high, and I was like, you know what? Bones will heal, and blood will coagulate, and you'll forget about all that stuff. But the emotional things that were happening, I could sense was something that none of those guys were ever going to forget.
It sounds like that event worked more like a tractor beam on luring you guys into the sport rather than a repellent and pushing you guys away.
Hell yeah, for about probably, I'm going to say like 90% of us, that's exactly what it did. I think the other 10%, like I said, they maybe came to a few classes, but I think they saw enough that night that they realized, you know what, this is not for me, and I'll start training, and then I'll just drift away when I think nobody's looking.
Now, since we've mentioned the B-roll, do you think you've puked more during the first three episodes of this show and the training than you had the rest of your entire life?
Maybe my freshman year in college would compete.
I love it.
It was terrible. There's a whole side story to that doesn't come into the television show at all, but I'm plugging away on the book, and it's going to make it in there. I found out over the course of this program that I'm gluten intolerant. So I don't have celiac disease, but I can't eat wheat. And I didn't know that. About a month or two into the program, I went to see a nutrition coach. Actually, it's Ricky Goodall, the fighter. And he put me on a nutrition program that didn't have any gluten in it. And honest to God, I felt like I was 10, 15 years younger. I didn't have any joint pain anymore. And I stopped puking when we did the extremely hard cardio. And I used to have really, really bad eczema or eczema. I don't know how you guys pronounce it, but like really, really bad rashes all over my skin. From the time I was about probably 10 years old, right up until last year, I would wake up in the morning and there would be blood all over our bed sheets from me like tearing the skin off my legs in the nighttime because it was so itchy, and I'd scratch it in my sleep. And once I gave up the gluten, all of those symptoms completely went away.
Wow.
Yeah, and John Alessio actually had the exact same journey. I was doing some research on gluten intolerance at one point, and I stumbled on John Alessio, and I was like, John Alessio, what the hell, the fighter? And looked into it, and sure enough, that was his gig too. He had trouble, making weight for years because of it.
Interesting.
Now, I got to ask you, you know, Lepaki talked about the puking. Is time become your favorite word?
Oh, my God, yes. Like, for a while, I actually had that set as the ringtone on my phone. when we would be being pushed to the absolute limit and beyond in those cardio workouts, those plyometrics workouts, and then Peter would he'd reserve that big shout of time for the actual end of the training session. So my God, we'd be wishing and begging and praying for that to come. It's funny you should say that, because there's a pro fighter that actually factors into the show, but I can't say more about it than that. He does factor into the show, and he now trains with Peter, and he didn't before. He trained elsewhere, and I ran into him today, and he said, Boyd, he said, when I saw an interview with you one time, you said you used to cry in the parking lot before you went to training. He said, I was thinking, Jesus, this guy's a pussy. He shouldn't be training. He's got no business being in a gym. And he said, last night, training with Peter, he said, I spent the whole night trying to convince myself not to cry. It really is that tough. I mean, Peter, I often joke with him that he's completely devoid of empathy. Just no matter how bad you suffer, he doesn't care. He's going to take you to your limit and see if you're willing to step across the line every single time.
Now, you know, one of the things I liked about, we talked about last week with Peter, was his ability to treat you guys like he treats his fighters. He doesn't change it up for you guys. You know, he didn't baby, you know, you guys. And Lepaki missed this, but it's something that still gets me every time I think about you, and that's running those suicides. And originally it was supposed to be for 15 minutes, Lepaki. This is no lie. He's telling the story, Peter. And he's like, yeah, so 15 minutes go by, and I said, let's keep going. And he goes, yeah, I think like an hour went by. And then Boyd jumps in. He goes, no, it was 1 hour and 14 minutes that these guys ran suicide. That's insane, dude. You don't, you know, you wouldn't, I understand a pro fighter, but, you know, to show you guys and you ladies, all the cubes, what it's going to be like, you know, I loved it. I loved his mentality. I like the fact that he, you know, he gives a little bit, but he doesn't give you so much help.
Yeah,
know?
I mean, there's two thoughts that I have about that. Number one is, I mean, he wasn't as hard on us in many ways as he is on his pro fighters, because none of us could have survived it. Like, these guys have spent months or years hardening themselves into the way that Peter trains. If he'd tried to do that with a bunch of couch potatoes, despite the fact that some of us were pretty fit to start, not MMA fit, but recreational sports fit, I mean, there's nobody could have survived the level of training that those pro fighters are doing, say, coming up to fight time. So in that sense, he did cut us some slack, but he didn't cut us much slack. I mean, he kind of rode that line. Because the other side of the coin is, I mean, Peter was trying to make people quit. He said, I will never tell somebody they cannot train jiu-jitsu. I will never tell somebody they cannot train MMA with me. He said, that's not fair. That's not my style. He said, they have to choose whether or not they want to be here. If they want to leave, they can. And with 36 people, there's no way Peter could give enough individual attention to a fighter or two to make them cage ready in a year if he had 30 people standing around him. He needed 80% of the people who were in front of him to quit. And he was going to do whatever it took to make those weaker people who had other things to do with their lives, people who just needed an excuse to quit, he was going to give them an excuse to quit. And those suicides, half suicides, half jumping burpees, was an attempt to do that.
Okay, now this is something that, you know, a friend of ours at Clinch, Lepaki, Chris Gregory over MMA Topics, and myself, we all talked about this week. You did lose a cube recently. And
yeah.
I'm going to be honest, boys. It blew me away. And I think I can speak for the group when we all discussed this week. We all got caught off guard. And I honestly did not see him being the one who quit. I never saw it. You know, and it took me away. And the show made it seem like he was happy about it. And, you know, I don't want to sit there and say he's happy, but, man, for a guy I believed would make it, one of the farther guys to make it because of his drive in the beginning during the tryout, it kind of surprised me. I'll even say it kind of gave me a shot to the gut I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, absolutely. And we had the same feeling within the program, too. Byron was actually on a reality show years ago. It was called Taking It Off, and he lost an incredible amount of weight, which is, and I knew him just as a friend of a friend, and it was one of the reasons that I approached him when we were doing the show and said, hey, you should come along and see if you can join us on this, because he's had enormous business success, so I could tell he was a very smart and driven guy, and I knew that he'd lost an enormous amount of weight in the past. And then life got in the way. He got very, very busy, very career-focused to put the weight back on. But I knew he had the kind of discipline to change his physique like that. So I thought he was going to be, like, the perfect guy. This 320-pound guy who goes in, loses over 100 pounds, completely turns his life around, fights. Like, I really thought he was going to be the guy. And when he quit, I mean, it was a real shock. It was a real... I don't know if it was a shock because his quitting kind of came on gradually enough that I could kind of see it, because I could see him breaking class by class by class. And he just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, but I could tell that he was kind of running out of options and it just wasn't going to happen for him. There's a piece that didn't make it into that episode with the suicides, but I remember that it happened around the same time. And it was another attempt of Peter's to, A, teach us some technique, B, toughen us up, and C, make a few people quit. He got us to get in groups of three, and we did double leg, full lift the guy up over your shoulders, slam on the mat drills. And we had to have a person standing on each end of the gym, and the other person ran between. And as you got to the opposite end of the gym, you got double-legged and slammed. And we had to do 100 each. So you got body slammed 100 times, and you body slammed somebody 200 times in the space of about 40 minutes.
Oh, that's definitely a pusher, huh?
Like, I don't know what that feels like to wrestlers or guys that are used to that kind of punishment, but to a group of people who really had no frame of reference for that, it was probably the second most difficult thing that I encountered all year. It was just unbelievably painful to be picked up by a grown man and slammed onto the ground 100 times.
Well, I tell you, you know, to see Byron leave the show, I was kind of bummed. But once again, your show gives such a validity to what you're doing. Seeing that aspect, this guy who I'm willing to bet a lot of fans like myself were behind, and to see him break and leave, you know, it was kind of a bummer. But
yeah, absolutely. I was getting tweets about him all week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. People have been tweeting me and actually sending in emails through the website as well, asking about for information on Byron. And I think one person asked if he was going to be on the podcast. And I did contact him, but he said he's just got an awful lot on the go right now, and it just wasn't in the cards. And maybe he feels sour. I don't know.
Well, I'm going to let Lepaki talk with you for a second. I'm going to get our guest, one of the guys who helped work with you, Cubes, and one of the gentlemen you got to watch perform at ECC. So let me grab him while you and Lepaki BS for a minute.
Sure. Lepaki, did I hear that you're a hunter? Hello? Are you on mute?
I just muted him by accident. Sorry. There you go. Sorry.
You there, Lepaki? Oh, no, he's muted me.
No, No, he's got, okay, we've got it fixed now.
Okay, good.
He delayed on the release.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely do participate in the activity of hunting.
Righto. I was listening to a show the other day, and I heard you say that, and I was a little taken aback. I was a little surprised. Might have to get you up here to see if you can't bag yourself a moose.
Dude, no, I would love to be able to come up there. I've had to turn down a trip up to Alberta in 2 weeks for one of my buddies and his brother go up there and goose hunt every year for 8 days.
Oh, nice. Yeah, actually, I have some buddies who went out to Saskatchewan this week for a goose hunt.
Yeah, man, he says it's just so much fun. It's just, they go, they hunt, they come back, they eat breakfast, they drink Bloody Marys, they go, they hunt, they drink water.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah, this is
yeah,
what
that sounds about. That sounds about right.
Now, well, hey, Boyd, are practices with the recording going on in Peter or practices without the recording going on in Peter harder?
Peter didn't give a shit if the cameras were there or not.
Well, speaking of Peter, we've got one of the gentlemen who got to fight at ECC, one of the guys who's been working with you, Cubes. We have professional fighter and badass getting ready to face off against David the Crow Loazo, Mike Kent. How you doing tonight, brother?
Well, not too bad. How's it going?
Doing wonderful. You're on with my co-host, Lepaki. I'm Skippy, and then we got Boyd. We're talking Cubicle to the Cage, but we'd like to talk a little bit about you. You know, for all the fans out there listening tonight all over the world, why don't you start off by telling them where you're fighting out of, what your record is?
My record's 9-3. I'm fighting out of Bowman's MMA. Titans MMA was my home for years until I moved out west with my family. So now I'm with Bowman's MMA in Fort McMurray, Alberta.
And you obviously know about the Cubicle to the Cage show, and, you know, they got to come and that night and watch a lot of you guys fight. When you first heard about this, what was your thoughts?
I think when I first heard about it, I was a little skeptical, as anybody is, just because, I mean, you're taking guys, some guys with all the athletic ability in the world, but aren't tough-wise, and then you're taking some guys that are the toughest, most rugged guys in the world, but they don't have an athletic bone in their body, and you're taking all these different types of people, and you're going to teach them how to fight. And, I mean, it sounds on the surface like an unreal a task to take on for anybody, especially to try to get 3 or 4 or 5 fighters at the end of it. But I mean, it worked. I mean, by the end of it, I mean, you had some guys that just weren't there for the show. They're actual real, like, people I'd consider fighters by the end of this. So, no, it was good.
Now, as a professional fighter, you know, you have, obviously, to kind of control what you're doing when you're working with somebody who's just coming into it. Obviously, you've been around, you've trained with, you know, amateurs and beginning pros at different levels, and you have to address it different, but most of those folks come with some kind of a background, whether it be wrestling, judo, boxing, Muay Thai. Now you're getting Cubes stepping up. Did you see any major differences in their hearts that you have seen from amateurs walking through the door?
In their hearts, you said?
Yeah, like in their drive,
I think... I mean, like I said, like you said, actually, a lot of the guys that are in the gym are wrestlers from high school, or they're judo black belts, or they did taekwondo as kids, or kickboxers, and a lot of these guys just never did any of it. So, I mean, the first couple months or the first month or two was just kickboxing again on pads or just kind of wrestling or rolling. And, I mean, I think they really – well, Boyd could speak for this, but I think they really seeded out the people that were going to make it from the people that I think that the numbers dropped rapidly once punches started flying at each other, because I mean, you can wrestle with your buddies on a Friday night in your living room while you're watching the UFC, but you're not once you start getting punched in the face, it's a different story. So I think there's, if you take 60 guys out of any group, out of any demographic, you're going to always have 4 or 5 guys that have backgrounds and something, a story behind them. They're tough. They've been through a lot in their life. And, I mean, I think there was a lot of guys in here that actually had heart, that had drive. And, I mean, I think I was surprised myself that, you some of the guys that came from some of the actual cubicle job backgrounds, like Boyd. I mean, Boyd isn't the type of guy you would think you could put through the ringer and he'd show up the next day, but he did. So, I mean, it speaks a lot for I don't judge a book by its cover.
Now, that's interesting because I want to talk to you about – okay, LaFonky, jump in real quick.
What were some of the jokes the fighters had the first few days that the cubes were maybe rolling around the gym?
As far as like one-liners and stuff, I'm not really too familiar with. I'm sure it was me that was saying them though, but I don't know if I can think of any quite.
This is Boyd. I got one for you. At one point, we were doing burpees, and I was kind of getting lazy and not really sprawling out good on my burpees, and Mike said, all the way down to the ground. So I kind of went all the way down to the ground, and he said, perfect, you got your vagina almost on the floor that time.
Yeah, I remember that now, yeah. So.
Which one of the guys had the best nickname among the cubes that only the pro fighters knew about?
Oh, I still think maybe Trash Canyon is the best nickname there is. Rick Doyle. Rick's a special character, man. He's one of those guys that you look at him and you're like, all right, this guy could take a shit kicking for sure, and you can tell that he's been through some stuff, and I don't even know if sometimes he realized he was on the show. He'd look at the cameras and say, I don't know why the fuck I'm here. I'm going to punch something or someone eventually. But I think he was definitely one of the characters that added to the production part of the show for sure, because he had a funny air about him.
Now, you know, we're talking honestly about, you know, people who've never been in the sport and, you know, unlike yourself. Now, you have honestly a ridiculous streak you were on, winning, and then you have a loss. I believe it was late last year was your first loss in your career. Mentally, and this is especially for a lot of the amateurs listening to the show tonight, what did you take away from that loss, and how did you address it mentally?
Well, the loss that I had was actually, it sounds, you would never expect me to say this, was actually my favorite fight. I fought a guy that at the time was 10-1. I was 8-0. He was 205 pounds, and I cut 1 pound to make the weight, and he fought me at about 230 pounds that night. Just a massive man, a hard puncher, and I mean, I've never performed better in that fight as I performed. And I just got caught with a punch in the second round and went down, and the ref stopped it. Whether it was a good stoppage or a bad stoppage, he hit me good, so I'm not complaining. It could have got a lot worse from there. But I walked away from that fight, and I said, wow, I can hang with these guys. I fought out of my weight class. I fought a really tough guy, and so I actually left there with a smile on my face, because, I mean, everybody loses. I'm not Anderson Silva or I'm not George St. Pierre, and if those guys have losses on the record, I know that mine was coming. So the loss is what scared me, but I kind of let me know that I could compete with them. And, I mean, Tim Schiavelli was a big guy at the time, and he had a lot of momentum behind them. So, yeah, it was actually, if you ask me to this day, that was my favorite fight. I watched the video, and I think I did everything right, except for, obviously, when I got hit that time. So I think I was winning till I lost, which is kind of a funny saying.
Skippy, I got to jump in here, because I think there's a super important point to what Mike is saying there. And that's something else that had a huge impact on why we Cubes were able to do what we did. And you saw it in episode 3 when you saw the celebration with Peter and Gavin Tucker back in the locker room after Gavin's victory. And when you saw the interaction between Mike and Peter between rounds in his fight and how Mike responded, because more than anybody else that I've ever met, Mike Kent is the epitome of a fighter. I mean, yeah, he did have an awesome run, and then he says his favorite fight is the first fight that he lost. That's the kind of thing that would have devastated a lot of lesser fighters. And then what does he do? He has a big loss. He comes back. He has a win. He says he's going to take some time off, and then instead fights Joe Dirksen and David Loazzo 6 weeks apart. I mean, when we, the Cubes, had guys like Mike that we were trying to step into their shoes in the Titans gym, I mean, we had to give it, like, 100%. We just had to when we had guys like that that we were trying to impress and that we were trying to live up to the name that they had.
Well, and I'm curious, what weight class do you prefer, Mike?
I should be fighting at 185. Like I said, when we touch gloves with Tim Chevalier at 205, like he's a 205 pound professional fighter. If you go to the UFC and you look at guys, the 205 pound guys are just just massive men. And I looked at him when we touched gloves, and I'm like, holy shit, like, what am I doing fighting this guy, right? but it's just one of those things where 185 is my weight class. Like you said, I was 8-0, but it was against local Eastern Canadian talent. I fought all locally, and I wanted to test myself against the best fighters, and like I said, I was never scared to lose. I knew it was coming. I know much better fighters than me that have losses, so I knew that was coming. But I'm only 2013 has been kind of a disastrous year for me, like record wise, but it's because of such a steep learning curve. I mean, I went from fighting guys where you could make the two or three little mistakes in a fight and still come out okay, to fighting guys that if you give them an inch, the fight's over in a second. And for me, those eight fights were good and they were rewarding, but each one was getting less and less rewarding because, okay, I'm fighting a guy that's 5-5 or 4-6 or 9-8, and I wanted to fight the best, but it's such a steep learning curve for that it took me that Tim Schmelly fight and I lost, and I bounced back and I beat Cody. Then I'm now, it turns out Elias Theodoro is one fight away from, he's going to end up in the UFC and he'll be successful.
Yeah, dude, no.
And he's 8-0, so, and I mean, I fought him injured, and I should have never even been in the ring that night, but I'm not saying I would have won that fight anyway. And then I fought Joe Dorkson, so these are all legends, right? So okay, you start at 1, and then you go to 2, and then you go to 3. I was going 20 kilometers an hour, and I went right to 100, and I think I finally got my head around where I need to be to fight these guys. In the Joe Dorkson fight, I just got caught by a black belt in an arm bar, so there's no shame in that. But my head was in the right place. Physically, I was there, so now I think I can take what I learned against Joe, apply it against Loazzo, and hopefully walk away with the upset. So, I mean, it's all baby steps, but you don't get to, when you progress in front of all these people and judges and critics, people say, oh, you're a bum, oh, you were 8-0, but now you're 1-3, but what they don't see is all the progress I'm making in the gym. I'm better than I was when I was 8-0. I just need it to all come together in the ring. So I'm not down on myself. I'm actually learning every day. I'm a better fighter. So we'll see against the Crow if I can put it together. So.
Well, no, and people, you know, where we live, I may not be familiar with Elias Theodoro, but he's a guy I've been watching for a while, and that dude is a freaking savage, dude. I mean, there is nothing. I mean, just even, you know, getting in the cage with that guy is a victory in itself, because that's something a lot of people aren't going to be doing.
He's a great fighter. I actually was in the best shape of my life. I'm a pretty confident guy. I'm still confident I could give him a run for his money. I know I can hang in there with him. And I showed up to Halifax in great shape, started the cut weight, and rolling at about 20% on the mats, just going over some techniques, popped my rib. And I got cortisone shots. I got frozen my side, everything before that fight. And I was going out. It was like I was going out in front of 3 days before the fight. I popped my rib, and it was like I was walking out in front of a shooting range or whatever. I knew, like, going out in that fight, I said, if we go to the ground, if I have to do a sit up, if anything at all, I said, I'm fucked. So I don't know if you can curse on here.
You're fine, brother. You're fine.
For that fight, I was basically, I feel like I just gave away a win. I mean, I can swallow a defeat, but that one's tough, because I shouldn't have been in there. But you have the promotion counting on you. You have family and friends that are coming in. I had friends fly in to see it. So, but I'm disappointed with that one. But, I mean, no excuses. Elias could have, on my best night, beat me. So it is what it is, just a learning experience.
Well, and that's one of the, you know, I mean, that decision you had to make that night is one of the things that for me kind of differentiates guys that are fighters and guys that are athletes that fight. Because, like, you know, a lot of guys would have been like, I'm not taking this fight with a bum rib, like, 3 days out, you know. But you, like, stayed in there. You just stayed in the pocket. We're like, screw it, man. This is the hand we were dealt. We're going to get in here and dance.
Yeah, I mean, I'm Peter Martel. I think Boyd's probably said it a lot to you guys, but I mean, Peter is one of those guys that all of us look up to. It doesn't matter if I was 15-0 UFC champion of the world. Peter says jump, you say how high. He's one of those guys that he's like a father figure, a role model. He's a great guy to all of us. So, and I mean, everybody just fucking. We hang on every word he says, and he brought me in to do a job. He sold tickets with my name and with Elias's name. It was for a title, so there was never a if I'm going to fight, but I knew in the back of my mind I wouldn't be able to put up any sort of fight, but it was kind of just like, all right, it's time to go get slayed, I guess. So it was pretty demeaning. It was a long flight home for sure, but I wasn't going to let Peter down. But in a way, you let him down anyway because you don't give the fans the main event that they should have got, so... look forward to paying them back on October 25th with the fight against Loazza. So it'll be a good one.
Mike, you've touched on something there, and I think a lot of fans out there should really understand how important or how great is it for these cubes to have somebody with the lineage that Peter has to work with them, to prepare them for this 14-month program. As a professional fighter, obviously, you know, you guys look at your coach's lineage and you guys look at what they've done and accomplished in their career. I mean, how unreal is it for these guys to get somebody like that to step up and train them?
If you don't know any better, those guys might think that you could walk into any club, and that's what you get, because a lot of these guys, they're walking in off the street with no experience. But I've trained at other gyms, and I know other coaches, and I'm not going to put anybody down or insult anybody, but because every gym and every coach has their aspects of what they're good at. But I honestly just don't think anybody puts it together the same way as Peter does. He understands the whole package. He understands how to deal with different personalities different ways. His knowledge of jiu-jitsu, just strength training, just everything all together in MMA. It's just he's a wizard. And I mean, like these guys, they haven't been to other gyms, so they probably think, oh, wow, this is a mixed martial art coach. But there's definitely something special in Peter that, I mean, you get to appreciate. And I mean, to have him on the East Coast, he's kind of like the hidden gem of the East Coast, because you hear of all these great coaches and Sean Tompkins before he passed away, and all these guys out west, and all these bigger gyms, and Titans is kind of like a smaller club on the East Coast, but it produces great fighters nonetheless. Gavin Tucker is probably going to be the best 145er in Canada by the end of this year, and Mike Malott's coming up. Roger Hollett's been a UFC fighter, so Peter definitely knows what he's doing, that's for sure, to say the least. So
now, you know, boy, I got to ask you, you know, having guys on the level of Mike and Gavin and to work with, you know, and to help you cubes, you know, how much did you guys appreciate that sacrifice, all the cubes that they, like, I know Peter would go to work, come train the first class, train the pro class, do the cube class, and I know that you guys all felt, you know, in awe of what he did. Were you guys treating the fighters the same who were dedicating all that extra time for you guys?
Yeah, you know, I don't think we did. and what Mike says is 100% right, that we really didn't know what we had. Maybe at the very, very end of the program, maybe a few of us started to realize exactly what we were given. But I don't think we realized. I think we took it for granted. And, I mean, the pros were hard on us verbally, and a lot of them weren't super happy that we were in the gym taking Peter's focus away from them and eating up mat space and all that stuff. And they're 100% right to feel that way. And it was the same thing about the program in general. Even pro fighters who weren't at our gym were not happy that we were over at Titans doing what we were doing, because they said it's just a mockery of the sport. I remember when we held the second round of tryouts, there was an article in the newspaper, and I think it might have been on the front page. And, like, on page 8 or 9 was, like, the highlights of T.J. Grant winning one of his fights. And somebody kind of pointed it out to me, hey, look, this is pretty cool. And I was like, you know what, this is actually not very cool. I was like, T.J. Grant should be on the cover of this paper, and Cubicle to the Cage should be on page 16. So we were kind of starting off from a point where we were going to have to work for absolutely any shred of respect that we were going to get. And Mike can probably talk about that better than I can. But I don't think from our side we really gave the pro fighters the respect that they deserved, because we really had no frame of reference for the work that they'd put in and how much suffering they'd done and how much sacrifice they'd given over the years to get where they are. I certainly understand it now, but I think throughout the year I didn't. And if there was ever a point that I said or did anything that disrespected the fighters, I really wish they knew that it was out of ignorance. It wasn't out of disrespect.
Skippy. No, I think that, you know, that's something that a lot of people may not understand what you're saying, but I think that's a valid point, Boyd.
Yeah, and that's, it's interesting because we have Mike here, and I'd like Mike to answer back to that. At what point, Mike, did you start to see fighters on your team, the pros, getting the respect that, you know, to the Cubes for what they're doing?
Well, I think there was a little bit of a – I don't think it was the Cubes didn't come in with their noses up, like, get off the mats, it's our turn type of thing. If there was any kind of disrespect at all, I think it was just sort of ignorance. Like, they just didn't know any better. They didn't know that you bow before you get on a mat when you do jiu-jitsu. They don't know the things that, like, as cool as of a premise as Cubicle to the Cage is, you take a guy, you train him for a year, he fights in a cage, it's an easy sell, and it's a great show, and it's good programming, but it's actually the complete opposite of what you would do to get into the cage. The running joke in the gym is 5 people or 10 people walk up to the front counter of an MMA gym every week and come up and say, hi, my name is blah, 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 I want to fight. And the owner of the gym says, okay, well, where's your background? What do you do? And say, oh, well, I've gotten a lot of fights in my life. And they kind of just get laughed out of the gym, right? So when people say that, they kind of get a black cloud put over them, or whatever you want to call it, and they're kind of marked. The people that fight are the people that come in and they sign up for jiu-jitsu, and then they earn their blue belt, and then they pick up some kickboxing classes, and slowly as a year or two goes on, or three, they go, geez, wow, I think I'm going to compete. I've been at this a long time. But they kind of stumble their way into a gym and get a love for a martial art. Most people don't walk into the gym saying, I want to fight in a cage, so I need to learn this jam-packed in 1 year and then fight. So I think it's kind of the opposite of the way most people go about it. But I think none of them are really disrespectful to us. I think if anything, a lot of the guys that were decided or decided they were going to stick it out, you have your Sonny Adamskis and your Boyds and even your Ricks and all these guys, I think they slowly began to get bonds with the pro fighters. And I mean, guys would take their time out to help the Cubes, and the Cubes would come and ask questions. So I think after the initial shock of having 30 new people, like normally you might get one or two new people a week at a gym, and then they don't even show up again if they have a rough go at it, and we have 50 people in the gym that are new. But after the shock of that and the numbers went down, I really think that it wasn't too big of a transition for some of the guys, and we didn't mix right away. Anyway, we kind of they stayed sequestered, and then we kind of they came up, and I think they fit in pretty good at the end. But it's a lot to learn in a year before you're going to fight in the cage, and knowing that it's kind of like a clock is always ticking down. Like when I first came to the gym, I didn't have here's 12 months. At the end of 12 months, you're going to fight. I just went to the gym and to kick pads, to get in shape, to lose weight. So they definitely had a pressure on them to learn everything and retain it. So,
yeah, there's two things that I think of when I hear Mike say that. And number one is the reason that I had this concept and wanted to do it this way was the fact that the couch sitting UFC watching beer drinking guy is never really going to understand how much a true mixed martial artist puts into it if they're only able to ever see somebody who steps in and, yeah, I already got 6 years of jiu-jitsu, or I already got a black belt in karate and I got a little bit of ground. Or if somebody's always stepping in at that level, they're never really going to understand what it means to go from 0 to 60 or 0 to 30 or even. So I wanted to make sure that people had as little ability as possible. And if this completely fell on its face and nobody fought at the end, well, that would be great. But we told the honest, authentic, proper story. So that's kind of the reason why we wanted to do it that way. And it just so happens that we managed to catch lightning in a bottle and had some crazy stuff happen that made for a compelling story as well.
Sorry,
go ahead.
1 second, boys. Mike, before we run out of time, I want you to take this time, man. Any sponsors you want to give shout-outs to, any social media, any information about your fight and getting tickets, anything. This is your time. Take a run at it.
Yeah, oh, shit, I just knocked over a bunch of stuff. I'm going to sponsor myself for a new lamp, I guess. No, but... ECC this October 25th is going to be a huge card. All the biggest fighters from the East Coast. Peter puts on great fights. Me versus David Loazzo. If you don't like me, which believe it or not, I don't know how you wouldn't believe it, and you want to see me get knocked out, David Loazzo, former UFC title contender. He's going to come to fight. He's undefeated since 2008 outside of the UFC. And me, who's 9-3, and I'm due for a win over one of these guys. I'm taking a crack at them, so that's going to be a great fight. At Mike the Titan is me on Twitter. My biggest sponsors are Remote Access and McNeil Motors, and I think that's it.
Well, I got to tell you, man, I want to wish you the best of luck. I hope you get out there and do what you know you can do, and that's grab that victory. I want to thank you also for taking the time to come on the show tonight and talk with us about Cubicle to the Cage. And I thank you again for working with all the Cubes, man, and, you know, giving guys, a shot and, you know, really working with them to see if some of these people can make that debut one day. Or just, I guarantee you, we talked with Boyd, and I know a lot of the people from the show have stayed, in gyms, and have stayed focused working out and being healthy and learning Brazilian jiu-jitsu and striking. So, I mean, you did a wonderful thing, man, and I want to thank you as a fan and media.
Well, I really just tried to befriend Boyd because after he turns 65, we can get the cheap copy of Tim Hortons. So that's really why I'm close with Boyd. But that's it. So.
Well, Mike, man, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thanks a lot for having me, guys. Anytime.
Hey, can't wait to see you. I can't wait to see you in a couple of weeks, Mike.
Yeah, I'll see you there, Boyd. Are you going to fight again or what, buddy?
Oh, we'll have to leave that one for the end of the show. We'll see.
all right, sounds good. No spoilers.
No spoilers.
All right, guys.
Later, brother. Speaking of spoilers, I mean, people are dying. I'm getting messages. When does episode 5 come out? Does it air Wednesday night or Thursday night? I'm like, it's Thursday night, folks. Relax. It's coming.
Episode 4 is coming up on Thursday night, and it is perhaps the craziest episode in the series.
Boys, what does it mean to hear a guy like Mike ask you when you're going to be back training in the gym?
the whole relationship between me and Mike is fantastic. It's something out of a cheesy after-school movie. Because that guy tore me to shreds verbally for months and months and months. And he just would not let up. He just rode me relentlessly, saying the most horrible things in the world, trying to get under my skin. And then one night I realized, it just dawned on me that he was doing it to me more than some of the other guys. And the other guys that he wasn't doing it to, he wasn't doing it to them because he didn't want to pick on them. And I think he sensed that I could take it, and he just kept ratcheting it up. And I was so happy, and I was so honored that he was kind of giving me a signal that maybe I belonged. Maybe I was mentally tough enough to take this on. And we were only a few months in, but that was like a, even though he never really patted me on the back and said, hey, Boyd, I know you can do this, from his behavior around me, I eventually got the feeling that, hey, you know what, he really is looking at me as one of his boys. And that was gigantic. That was huge. Because Lord knows I had enough doubt every damn day of this program. So when I had little moments of confidence when guys like that gave me a sign that I was doing something right, it just it kept me going. And to hear him speak now is just it's awesome. I mean, I'm sitting here now, I my whole body is glowing. I feel so happy. Don't tell him that though.
You know, Boyd, once again, I can't thank you. An hour flew by again so fast. You know, Draco Impact Armor, they have stepped up like you folks would not believe. You guys need to go check that website out, man. Whether you need a gi, hand wraps, gloves, bags, mats, whatever you need, Draco Impact Armor, man. These guys have stepped up to make sure that every one of the cubes was dressed down like a professional fighter. And I got to say, Boyd, you guys look like a good team, all cleaned up with the Draco Impact Armor on everything.
Yeah, I tell you, man, that sent the right signals to the brain when we got rid of those sweaty old T-shirts and nasty old swimming trunks and got to put on some good gear and start training. Like I said, I don't know if it improved the technique any at all, but at least we look good.
Did the level of effort increase after that for a little bit, maybe?
You know, it did. It totally did. And then they gave us sparring gear, and we were all too punch drunk to do much of anything for a while.
It's funny, though, because, Lopaki and myself, we've covered tons of events, and we've seen amateurs who have come out, and they're just wearing, basically gym shorts and a plain T-shirt. And we'll see a sponsor at the event, or even ourselves, give an amateur fighter a Madhouse T-shirt. I used to do it a lot, especially when we had, like, Draco on the back, because we used to print a bunch of shirts with their logos on it. And we'd give it, and those kids would come out walking 10-foot tall and bulletproof in their mind. And it's weird that something like that, just some clothing to make you guys look like a team, could bond you guys to not only as a team, but effort-wise, and give all you guys that push to go harder.
Yeah, that the Titans logo, too, like having the Titans logo on it, because, I mean, we may have been fairly ignorant and didn't really know what we were getting, but we knew enough to know that if we had that Titans crest on, that we had an obligation to fulfill.
Well, I love it. And, boys, I'm definitely looking forward to, folks, Thursday night, RadX TV, episode 4. And I'm so blessed because you're good to us at Madhouse. All I got to say is, brother, next week we're going to have one hell of a show.
Oh, my God, are we going to have one hell of a show. And as soon as it's over, tweet your favorite moment from the show with the hashtag cubicle to the cage, and Draco will give some lucky folks some awesome gear.
And we've got the new hashtag, Boyd is the new Walter.
Nice. I love it. I got to get that myself a pork pie hat and a green shirt.
Yes.
Hey, I will tell you what, I love the fact, folks, go out there and follow Draco Impact Armor, man, on Facebook, on any social media, Twitter, because they are. Every week they're giving away gear. These guys are so good to not only fighters but to fans. Look, you get a chance to win some beautiful gear. Madhouse is giving away stuff from gift certificates to hand wraps and everything in between from them. And I'm honestly, I love what they do for fighters. I love what they do for Cubicle to the Cage. And I'm glad to see them giving to the fans one more time and fighters. I mean, all you got to do is watch the greatest MMA show on television today. Hands down, the greatest show you will find about MMA. And this isn't taken from a promoter's point. This isn't taken from a fighter's point. This is taken from a cubicle who wants to get there. This is like you've never seen it, folks. Hands down, the best show on television, Cubicle to the Cage. Boyd is the new Walter. Remember that, folks.
Did we lose him?
No, Boyd's here. Sorry.
Oh, no. Boyd,
no, I was just basking in that wrap up. That was pretty awesome.
Hey, have you, before we wrap up, have you got any confirmation on going back home for the...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I don't know if I told you, but it's actually a fundraiser for the Shakespeare by the Sea Festival, which seems like a real odd connection to some old cage fighting. Like I said, I taught literature for a number of years in high school, and I know old Will Shakespeare, when he was putting on his plays, had bare knuckle fighting and dog fights and bears fighting lions and everything outside the front gates when he was trying to put on his plays. So I think he'd be pretty damn happy that I was going to go home, and we're going to show a couple of episodes of the show. I'm going to do a little talk about tenacity and facing your fears, and try to raise a bit of money for that charity.
Would you do me a favor and shoot me a copy of the event press release so we can get it up on Madhouse for you?
Yeah, absolutely I will, for sure.
Okay, definitely. And boy, your time, any thank out, anything you want to get out about the show, anything, go for it.
I'm definitely gonna pimp Extreme Cage Combat, taking place here on October 25th. I really want to get a lot of people out to that one. Mike Kent, like he said, he really is due to have a good run at one of these really high-profile fighters to take his career to the next level. We also have Tristan Johnson and I believe Lyndon Whitlock fighting on this card. Some enormous Canadian talent, much less East Coast talent. So I want to see as many people out there supporting those local fighters as we can possibly get out. I want to thank, as always, Copycat Digital, my personal sponsor, who helped me out when I was trying to get this project off the ground, and Draco, of course, who are always in our corner.
Baki, you got anything you want to wrap up with?
Man, dude, no, I'm just ready for the next episode to roll out. I need to figure out if I can just get, like, an advanced screening of the remaining 9 episodes. What do you think, Boyd?
I'll see what I can do for you. But don't you enjoy it a little more when you have to wait just a few days?
Yes. No.
Yes. Yes. No.
Yeah, you know what? I watched three seasons of Breaking Bad on a sick day. So.
See, that's what I'm talking about. I guess I could just wait till like week 12, and then just do like a quick run through.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, I'll see what I can do for you.
That might make our conversations a little awkward, though, if I stop watching and wait till the very last week.
Yeah, that would be odd. We could just talk about hunting. We can just change the show.
Yeah, no, I totally. What do you hunt for up there? Moose? Do you guys have any caribou on that side?
Quite a bit farther north. Yeah, big game is white-tailed deer, caribou, moose, bear. Before I started training, I was into duck hunting pretty big for 5 or 6 years, but I put all that on the shelf to train full-time, so.
Nice. Yeah, it's duck and goose season getting ready to roll up right now.
Yeah, funny.
Just had a huge weekend out teal hunting.
Oh, yeah, they changed the season on us here, so the season opens a week later, and the teal are all gone.
That's bullshit.
I know. Listen, we're going to bring down the government. We're going to bring down the government. They screwed us.
Join us, brother. The Canadian government should just shut down, too. I mean, it's obviously what all the cool governments are doing.
Yeah, it's what all the cool countries are doing. Just shut down. Yeah, the Canadian government has shut down before, but nobody noticed.
Boyd, well, before your wife shuts you down, because I know it's late and you got to spend a little bit of time with your wife and kids if the kids aren't already asleep. Tuesday, same time. Saturday, guys, you can go to Top MMA News. Also, as well as MMA Madhouse, we're both working to help get people to the cage out. You guys can follow us. We're going to give you guys everything as quick as we get it for Boyd. Also follow Cubicle to the Cage.
If I get the next 9 episodes, I'm not giving that shit to anybody. Y'all motherfuckers can wait.
No, not that. Now, I'll tell you what. My wife's starting to get mad. She's like, I figured out how to beam it off my BlackBerry to the TV. So I'll just walk in the bedroom and sit down in the recliner and hit beam. Whatever she's watching, I just throw up Cubicle to the Cage. She gets so angry. I love it. Okay, boy, we're going to wrap up. Brother, once again, always a pleasure. I can't wait for next week. I can't wait for Thursday night, Rad X TV.
Here's what I'm going to say about next week. He's trying to kill me.
Yeah, you know what? He was trying to kill me. He was trying to kill me. That's true. Okay, thank you, guys. Can't wait to do this all again.
All right, buddy. Thanks again, Boyd. It was a blast.
Hey, take care.
Boyd Sharp.
Big shout out to the sponsors who make this show happen every week, Draco Impact Armor and Jax Media. You guys check them out, jaxmedia.ca. Also check out Draco Impact Armor. Guys, seriously killer deals. Follow them, free stuff, Lepaki.
Dude, I think we just hit him with one hell of a cliffhanger going into next week's discussion about Cubicle to the Cage right there.
Dude, if you weren't jonesing for another episode, that one lie right there, help, he's trying to kill me, is worth, you guys, trust me, you won't even understand, just, I'm not going to say more than that. All you got to know is, help, he's trying to kill me. That's all you got to know. Fucking Eagle, brother.
Osprey.